is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Every single coach is assigned to a different team or a different group, and there's different times where those groups rotate out and they have to go right over to that coach to receive some feedback and also to share their own thoughts with each other. And I'll bounce, you know, between each group. And certainly if we got to stop something to make a point to the wired group, we certainly will, especially early on in the year. But I think our guys like it a lot better when we don't stop the play as much and we talk to them off to the side when we're rotating in and out and when we're kind of transitioning between drills.
Matt Monroe is the head boys basketball coach at St. Ignatius College Prep in Chicago, Illinois. Before coming to St. Ignatius, Monroe spent 8 years as the head sophomore and lead varsity assistant boys basketball coach at St. Patrick High School in Chicago. Previously, Matt spent time as an assistant basketball coach at Niles West High School, Vernon Hills High School, and Deerfield High School. He also coached club basketball for 12 years and was a student manager for the DePaul University men's basketball team. In addition to his coaching duties, Coach Monroe serves on the executive board of the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Travis Schwab, head men's basketball coach at Muskingum University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Be prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Matt Monroe, head boys basketball coach at St. Ignatius College Prep in Chicago, Illinois. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are pleased to welcome from St. Ignatius College Prep in Chicago, Illinois, the head boys basketball coach, Matt Monroe. Matt, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Thanks. Thanks a ton for having me on here. It's an absolute honor to be able to join you guys.
Well, we are excited that Nick Legalbo reached out to us and said we should get on the podcast and talk to you. which is exactly what we're going to do tonight. Want to dig into all the great things that you've been able to do in the game of basketball. Want to start out by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball. What are some of your earliest memories?
Absolutely. To be honest, basketball has been a huge part of my life, really, since before I could remember. My dad was a grammar school coach in Chicago in the 70s before I was born. And when I was really young, some of my earliest memories were joining him for some of the games that he was coaching. When I was old enough, I'd work the scoreboard or do the scorebook or just kind of sit on the bench and hang out with the team. And when I got old enough to start playing, I tried to play on as many different teams as I possibly could. Some of them were coached by my dad and others were not. Whenever there was an opportunity to play basketball, I certainly took it. Though I will tell you, I was not the most talented kid or the most athletic kid. And I kind of knew early on that, you know, I loved basketball as a passion of mine, but coaching was probably more in my future than playing. So even since I was 8 years old, I've always wanted to be a basketball coach. Even in eighth grade, in our school yearbook, they predicted everybody's future occupations. And, you know, most people were going to be doctors, lawyers, police officers, firemen. In my eighth grade yearbook, they predicted that I would be a basketball coach. And it's literally the only path that I ever thought that I would take. But when I was young, I wanted to try to see through the playing part as long as I possibly could. And I played everywhere I could. And going into my freshman year in high school, I ended up breaking my wrist on my shooting hand. And I really kind of struggled at tryouts in my recovery, and I didn't make the team my freshman year. I ended up spending a lot of the winter playing competitively with the CYO basketball team at my church, and I geared up to try out again my sophomore year. And at tryouts, I broke my wrist again.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I ended up not being able to play high school basketball at all in an organized sense outside of CYO. And it was really devastating to me because I was absolutely 100% passionate about the game, and I loved playing. And my junior year, I kind of took a step away from the game. I didn't try out again, and I kind of focused on other hobbies and other interests. And I knew I couldn't stay away that long. And when I became a senior in high school, I ended up graduating a little bit early. And I was working at GameStop, not doing much else, sleeping in late, hanging out with my friends. And my dad was still coaching at the time. He was coaching my brother's team. My brother was in seventh grade at our local high school's feeder organization. And my dad offered to give me his salary if I would just help him out with coaching. And that's kind of how I ended up back in the game when I was a senior in high school and kind of began my journey as a coach.
Wait, Mike, I'm jumping in.
All right, you're jumping in. You're in early. Three minutes and 28 seconds in.
Matt, you worked at
nice job, Matt.
You worked at GameStop. Is that what I heard? You worked at GameStop?
I did. That was up until I became a coach. That was my longest tenured job, working at GameStop.
Now, this was like back in like, I don't know what year was that, Matt? This was like...
Well, let's just say I was there for the release of Sega Dreamcast, if that dates me.
I know. I got you. That's 2000...
Is that a video game, guys?
Yeah. It's a system, man.
Oh, sorry.
I'm jealous. I always wanted to work at GameStop. I never did. I wanted to work there primarily because I wanted the discount. Anyways, that's all I want to say. That's a pretty cool job, man. I like that.
Thanks.
All right. So what do you remember from that first experience coaching? What was it like when you first stood in front of a group of kids and you're holding your whistle or you're holding your clipboard or you're trying to figure out what you're going to do? What do you remember about some of those first moments?
You know, the first thing was I didn't really know what to expect. Even though I'd wanted to be a basketball coach since I was eight, I mean, I used to take my dad's Nike Championship Basketball Clinic notepads and court diagrams and make my own plays even when I was in grammar school. But, you know, once you actually go and do it, it becomes real. And so when I first started, I was a senior in high school. I was 18 years old. I had never coached before, and I hadn't really played organized basketball for a little bit. So I was nervous. So the first couple of practices, I kind of just stood off to the side and didn't really say much. And kind of as the season went on, my dad found ways to manufacture opportunities for me to at least get a little bit more involved vocally. He'd have me give a few points during, you know, different segments at practice or give a short little speech at the beginning of games. But I really kind of found my footing at the last tournament of my first year coaching. This Deerfield Feeder basketball program played in a yearly tournament in Madison, Wisconsin. It was a big tournament. Everyone looked forward to it. It was our version of the NCAA tournament. And I'll never forget, we're playing a school, and we ended up being down by about 15 or 16 at halftime. And my dad thought it was a great opportunity, kind of like in the movie Hoosiers, when Gene Hackman got himself thrown out of the game on purpose so Shooter could coach the team.
Nice.
My dad felt, you know what, I'm going to have my son Matt go in there and give the halftime speech. So I gave a halftime speech, and I was really proud of it. And we ended up coming back and winning the game. And it was not because of any type of halftime speech, but it was a lot of fun and a great moment. We ended up going on to win that tournament. And I remember driving with my dad back from Madison back to Deerfield, a northern suburb of Chicago. And I told my dad, this is what I want to do. This is exactly what I want to spend my life doing. And from that moment on, everything I did was geared at trying to become the best coach I could be and to try to make up for lost time that I had lost during that time where I wasn't playing in high school.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think that moment sort of galvanized you to know that you wanted to be a basketball coach?
To be honest, I think it was more so the reaction of the kids and the families after the game, after the comeback. It was a great moment, and everyone was so excited about what we had accomplished. And the rest of the trip, just from, you know, the entire season of building connections, there was just a great sense of community and fantastic relationships that were built. And it also reignited my passion for the game and for everything that the game gives you. Not just what happens on the floor, but the lessons you learn and the experiences you share with others.
When you finish high school, what's your college decision-making process look like? Are you thinking you want to be a high school coach? Are you thinking you want to be a teacher? Are you thinking you want to be a college coach? Just explain how you went through your process of choosing a college. You ended up at DePaul. Just talk a little bit about what that was like for you making that decision.
Yeah, well, before my experience coaching with my dad, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do in college. I wasn't the best student growing up. I got a lot better as my high school career went on. And before I started coaching, I thought maybe I would get into film. That might be the route I was going to take. But after my experience coaching and falling in love with that profession, I ended up changing my college search. And I applied kind of on a whim to DePaul. My grandmother was a huge Blue Demon fan, especially in the 80s with all the great teams they had and playing on WGN. So she encouraged me to apply at DePaul too. And I got accepted, but I ended up going to a different campus, not right downtown, for my first year. And when I was there, I knew I wanted to be a coach, but I wasn't quite sure, you know, should I pursue college? Did I want to pursue high school? So my mom, who is a principal of an elementary school, encouraged me to get an education and kind of keep my options open. And so I started pursuing a teaching degree in history. Now, while I was there, like I kind of alluded to before, I really tried to make up for lost time. And so I remember my freshman year, I volunteered for a local AAU program, Full Package Athletics. I started stuffing mailings and envelopes for them to send out to people about their camp. I helped out with their trainings, their camps, their skill development sessions, and then eventually their teams. I also volunteered as a manager for the Barra College men's basketball team, which had been bought. That campus was bought by DePaul, but they're in one of the final years of still being able to field a team. And I also volunteered to be a coach in my local high school, as well as coach some travel teams on my own and sticking with that Deerfield Feeder organization. So I literally coached every single second I could. I think my schedule freshman year, I think I had class from like 8 o'clock to maybe 2 o'clock, and, you know, not straight, but in different spurts. And then I would go to Deerfield High School practice from about 3:30 to about 5:30. And then I would go to the Deerfield Young Warriors practice from 6 to 7:30. And then Barra College would practice from 9 to 11 at night. And that was my every single day, my freshman year. My sophomore year, I kept the same schedule, but I ended up taking most of my classes down in the Lincoln Park campus at DePaul. And it was then where I volunteered to be a student manager for the DePaul men's basketball team.
What did that conversation look like when you went in? What was the process for getting the opportunity to be a student manager? Because depending, again, on different schools and how desirable it is to become a manager, I know those spots aren't necessarily always easy to get. So how did that come about for you?
Well, the first thing is I ended up taking my freshman year a class called Theories and Techniques of Coaching. And it was the one class I had downtown, and it was taught by Doug Bruno, who's the women's coach at DePaul. And it was taught at the time by a coach named Jack Fitzgerald, who used to be at Richards High School. He's Dwayne Wade's high school coach. He ended up working in the NBA with a few jobs. And so I got to meet Coach Lato, Dave Lato, who is the head coach at DePaul, because he was the guest speaker at one of those classes. And so I expressed my interest to him, and I ended up scheduling a time where I could go visit a workout. And then over the summer, I was coaching a travel team. And we were down in Orlando at an AAU tournament. And I ended up happening to run into the head manager at DePaul at the time. And we ended up coming to, develop a pretty nice relationship together. And he ended up bringing me on board towards the end of the summer.
Once you are in that position, give people an idea of some of the things that you had to do as a student manager, both on the side of maybe there are some things that don't necessarily apply to coaching that you had to do, but then some of the things that you got to see and that you got to be a part of that helped you to jumpstart your coaching career.
Well, one of my good friends used to always tell me that even if he wasn't in athletics or basketball more specifically, he would always recommend hiring a manager, a former manager for a job, because they're willing to do literally anything and everything that it takes. There's literally no job too big or too small for a student manager. So, you know, going into it, there were a lot of responsibilities that we had that had nothing to do with basketball, but everything to do with, you know, being a hard worker and serving the team. So we would do laundry, pack bags, help organize film exchange and stuff like that. Certainly, we always had a towel on our shoulder in case we needed to wipe the floor. We worked the scores clock and film practices. But Coach Lato and his staff knew right away, because I was very, very forthcoming about it, that I wanted to be a coach. And so they ended up putting me in different positions where I was able to observe meetings, and they gave me jobs that also had to pertain to coaching as well, involving film and film exchange and some of those organizational things, practice planning and so on. I was kind of involved in some of those things, obviously on the periphery, but it really helped prepare me in many ways, I think, to kind of advance in coaching. But we had some really good experiences. My sophomore year, we ended up making the NCAA tournament, and we finished tied, and it was something like a five-way tie in Conference USA for the regular season championship. And we finished second in our conference tournament, lost to Cincinnati at Cincinnati, and ended up playing in the tournament. We beat Dayton in a double overtime game in Buffalo, New York in the first round. And the second game, we ended up running into that UConn team that had Ben Gordon, Emeka Okafor, Charlie Villanueva. They got us pretty good. But it was a tremendously positive experience, and it's something that I was forever grateful for my sophomore year and my junior year being a manager for the team.
What was your relationship like with the players? Was there one particular guy that you kind of gravitated towards that you formed a friendship with, or a couple guys, or just how did that relationship work between players and managers and for you in particular?
Yeah, I think DePaul had a pretty good culture of embracing the student managers and understanding that, you know, even though it's in a different way, they're, you know, in a way part of the team too. So the players were great. Whenever they needed anything, they asked. Whenever we needed their help with anything, they would be more than willing to help us as well. But there was a lot of guys that I developed a pretty good friendship with. Sammy Mejia was our point guard. He was phenomenal. 6'7" guard from New York. Andre Brown, former McDonald's All-American, was a great guy. Cumont Greer from Milwaukee, and Drake Diener ended up developing some really good friendships with a lot of those guys that we still talk to this day.
How did you straddle that relationship between being connected to the players? Obviously, you're their same age, you're a college student just like they are, versus the amount of time that you're spending sort of behind the scenes with the coaching staff. How did you balance those two relationships? Like if a player's saying to you, oh, I can't believe coach is doing this or whatever. How did you balance that type of situation, if that ever happened to you?
You know, that's a great question. We were winning, so there wasn't really a lot of that. I wasn't in those types of situations very often. I do think that because of my desire to go into coaching, I tried to take as neutral of a perspective as possible if there ever was any issues. But to be honest, there weren't really any. You know, certainly there's day-to-day struggles within a program, but I think, you know, we had a good culture and we were winning, so there was a lot of positivity.
The experience that you had there, did it make you think about, hey, maybe college coaching is the route that I want to go? Or did you see some things with college coaching, you're like, oh, maybe, you know, my experience as a travel coach maybe leads me more towards being a high school coach? Just where was your mindset at as you were going through your college experience in terms of where you thought you might end up as a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. So going into my senior year, I kind of was at a little bit of a crossroads. Our coach, Coach Lato, got hired at the University of Virginia, and we had a new coach coming in. And it was also time for me to begin my student teaching career. And so I was kind of torn which route I wanted to take. And so my senior year, I ended up volunteering at the school that I was student teaching at as a coach. And, you know, throughout my entire college career, I had coached junior high teams and AAU teams. They had different rules back then for a lot of that recruiting stuff. But I really kind of enjoyed, I loved the college experience, but I really enjoyed working with those high school teams. And one of the guys that really had a huge influence on me was actually the coach at my high school. His name was Steve Pappas. And when he knew I wanted to get into coaching, he was teaching a couple of college level courses on coaching. And he really kind of served as a mentor to me. The first person that ever called me coach as I was kind of walking the hallways in my high school. And, you know, I kind of weighed the pros and cons of both in terms of what I wanted to pursue. But to me, I wanted to have a family and I didn't want to be gone all the time. And I also wanted to kind of build a program from the youth levels all the way up to kids when they kind of graduated high school. And I saw it as a great opportunity. To be honest, when I student taught, I fell in love with teaching as well. So to me, you know, high school presented the best of both worlds. I got to teach history during the day and I got to teach basketball after school. And I got to build a program from start to finish and develop those lasting relationships. So that's kind of how I ended up deciding to stick with the high school route. Now, I had a couple of opportunities and offers to coach at some smaller colleges, but to me, my heart was always in the high school game.
Do you think that, I mean, when I hear about guys trying to make that decision between high school and college, I think one of the things that you mentioned that is a super critical thing to take into account is, especially as a young coach, we've talked to a lot of guys that have gone on and been college basketball coaches, and they just, again, talk about the amount of time that it takes, whether you're on the road recruiting or you're in the office or you're doing this or you just – It's a challenging lifestyle, especially at the beginning where you're doing a lot of that work for next to nothing. Not that you're getting rich as a high school teacher by any means, but by the same token, you know, paying your dues as a college coach, I think people see those guys who are at kind of the top of the mountain as Division I head coaches, and they think that that's a smooth path to go from graduating from college to getting up to where you're going to be on TV and you're having one of these glamour jobs. And of course, anybody who's in the coaching profession knows that that's a far cry from what actually happens. So you chose to go the high school route. What's the first job that you take, and what do you remember about both your teaching experience and your coaching experience in that first job?
Yeah. So I had kind of, like I mentioned before, I had coached and worked with multiple teams throughout, you know, my college experience. My freshman and sophomore year in college, I volunteered at my high school, at Deerfield High School. I was a volunteer assistant on the sophomore team. My junior year, I did not coach high school. I focused on what was happening at DePaul and my travel team. But my senior year, I was at this school just north of the city called Niles West, volunteering for the varsity team. And once I kind of finished my student teaching experience, I ended up getting a job teaching middle school. It wasn't even social studies. I was teaching citizenship and study skills, which is kind of ironic since I wasn't the best student growing up. And I ended up getting hired at Vernon Hills High School as the head freshman coach. And I also did double duty and helped with the varsity as well. And I was there for 2 years. And Matt McCarty was the head coach. He's a tremendous friend and an absolutely phenomenal coach. I learned a ton from him. But I had ended up being a manager at DePaul. And on the women's side, one of my best friends, his name is Brandon Bailey, was a manager for Coach Bruno. We developed a really close friendship. And his dad is the head coach at St. Patrick High School on the north side of Chicago. In the last, I think, 55 years, they've only had two head basketball coaches at St. Pat's. And they have a storied tradition. And, you know, I ended up kind of having an interesting situation. So I was at Vernon Hills. I wanted to move into teaching high school history. And I wanted to advance my career as a coach. And so what ends up happening at the end of my second year at Vernon Hills, right around the springtime, I was interviewing for a head coaching job. 23 or 24 years old. And I was interviewing at a school right along the Mississippi River, about 3.5 hours from where I lived. At the same time, Coach Bailey over at St. Pat's told me that he might have an opening at St. Pat's as one of his assistants and also a social studies teacher. And he was kind of waiting on two of his assistants to see whether or not they were going to be hired as head coaches at other schools. So I wasn't quite sure what to do. So I go to this school right along the Mississippi River for my interview. Takes a little while to get there. I drive in. There's just a couple of buildings in the city downtown or in the town. And I ended up having a nice interview. And on my way back, they called me and offered me the job. And I was super excited. I thought, wow, I could be a head coach at the age of 23 or 24. This is fantastic. But the more I thought about it on my way home, I also wanted to make sure that I was as prepared as possible to be the best possible coach I could be once it was time for me to take over. So I call Coach Bailey and ask him what is going on, you know, in the situation with his assistants and whether or not he'd have a spot for me. He wasn't quite sure. So I told this school that offered me the job that I would like to think about it over the weekend because it was going to require a big move and, you know, a big lifestyle change. And as I thought about it over the weekend, I didn't really know what to do, but I knew I really felt that I needed to continue to grow as a coach to be prepared to take over a program. So that Monday, when I was about to call this school and tell them what my decision was, I saw reported online, Chicago Sun-Times, that Coach Bailey's assistant got hired at a school called Bennett Academy. So I called Coach Bailey and he said that it was time, that he was going to push for me to come in for an interview. So I turned down that head coaching job, and I became the head freshman coach and a history teacher at St. Patrick High School. And I ended up serving as the head freshman coach for 2 years and the sophomore coach for 6. And at St. Pat's, when you're an assistant coach at any level, you're assistant coach for the varsity. So I would spend every single day during the season doing two practices. I'd do my 2-hour freshman practice or 2-hour sophomore practice, and then go right into the 2.5-hour varsity practice. And it was a clinic. I learned so much about coaching, about X's and O's, about, you know, leading a program, the administrative side of things. And I really am happy that I made the decision to have Coach Bailey as my mentor and to work with the wonderful people at St. Pat's, because I think that that experience, along with my experiences from before, really helped prepare me to be a head coach later on.
Did anybody, when you turned down that head coaching job to go and take an assistant's job, did anybody in your inner circle say to you, hey, that's crazy to pass up the opportunity to be a head coach at such a young age? Or just what were the conversations like with people around you in your inner circle when you were making that decision?
Yeah, some of my friends were questioning my decision. They thought, oh, well, this is what you wanted. Like, you go now, go now. But I'm very, very lucky. I've had some tremendous mentors in my coaching journey. Obviously, both my parents, my mom being a school administrator, my dad being a coach, Coach Pappas at Deerfield High School before he passed away, Matt McCarty at Vernon Hills, and Greg Capitamalis at Deerfield, and Ken Davis, who was formerly the coach at Lake Forest College. And those mentors were able to kind of give me a little bit of a different perspective, and they supported and in fact encouraged me to continue to learn the game before I got into a position where maybe I bit off more than I could chew at such an early age.
I know the list is going to be long and extensive, but can you give us one, two, three things maybe that you learned during your time at St. Patrick's that when you reflect upon that and you think about now what you're doing as a head coach, what are some of the most important things that you learned during that time that have helped you to build a successful program as a head coach?
So the first one is that coaching is much more than what happens on the court. It's about relationships, it's about experience, it's about support, it's about love. And that's something that we really kind of talk a lot about at St. Ignatius. The mission of our basketball program is our basketball program is much bigger than basketball. And that is definitely something that I learned at St. Pat's and from my other mentors. The second one is outwork everybody. We are not afraid in our program, myself included, to put in the extra time to go above and beyond what it takes to be successful and to not just work hard, but to embrace and love the work that goes into it. The third thing is building a program, just like coaching, is a lot more than just what happens on the court. It's being organized. It's being detail oriented. It's about constantly evolving and trying to grow. It's about relationships. It's about connections. And it's about really kind of trying to strengthen the overall life of everyone that you come into contact with.
All right, let's talk about bigger than basketball. So on a high level, I understand exactly what that means and what you're trying to say. On a more concrete day-to-day level, what does that look like when you're trying to establish a program that's bigger than basketball? What are some things that you guys do day-to-day that you feel embodies that philosophy of our program's bigger than basketball?
So our program being bigger than basketball is closely connected to the culture that we've tried to build at St. Ignatius. Some of the things that we might do that represent that culture. So first of all, our school's mission aligns perfectly with the mission of our basketball program. The Jesuit priests that operate our school, they believe in something called cura personalis, which is a Latin term. It basically means the whole person. So everything we do is aimed at trying to develop the whole person. One of the best examples that I can bring up that I think sheds light on what the day-to-day operations would be in terms of fitting that mission, we have a program within our basketball program called our Be More series. And what we do is we meet weekly with our guys and we talk about issues and items that oftentimes have nothing to do with basketball, but have everything to do with being a great person. We'll bring in guest speakers. Sometimes our players, especially our seniors, will lead the talk. Sometimes it's just our coaching staff. But we'll talk on issues such as leadership, faith, communication, how to handle adversity and turn it into a positivity, all sorts of issues that certainly translate into giving our guys the tools that they need to be successful, not just on the court or in the classroom, but beyond that when they graduate our school.
What's the best guest speaker, or who's the best guest speaker that you've had, and what message have they shared with your kids?
Oh, there's so many. We have so many great ones. We've had some alums come in recently. Nana Egwu's probably the all-time leader in block shots, not just in our school's history, but probably the state of Illinois. He is at the University of Illinois. And he came in this year to kind of talk about, you know, what being a great teammate has meant to him and the relationships that he's built in the game and how those have transcended the game. One of my mentors and good friends, he leads our Illinois Basketball Coaches Association, which I work pretty closely with, Jim Tracy. Last year, or 2 years, I should say, right before the pandemic, did a big talk on the importance of sticking together no matter what. Our athletic director, Coach Hurley, talked about this year what it's like in terms of Jesuit education and playing basketball and how they're intertwined. So we've had some tremendous speakers, but I do have to be honest, the ones that really get me the most are when our seniors lead those talks and they talk about their experience and they talk about the work that's needed and they talk about their love for one another.
You also mentioned that your program is about hard work and you talked about being willing as a player in the program, but also you yourself as a coach of putting in that extra time that it takes to really have the kind of success that you want to have. And this has been a theme, Matt, that's kind of run through our show when we talk about sort of the baseline amount of time that it takes for a high school coach today to build a successful program. And I think whatever that number of hours that you want to put on it per week, per day, per month, per year is, I would say, much higher than it was 15 or 20 years ago in terms of what parents, players, community expect and need in order for the program to be successful. So when you talk about hard work, can you give us an idea of some of the extra things that you put effort into that you feel like sets your program apart and allows you to have the kind of success that you want to have?
So being a head varsity coach at a high school is a full-time job. I joke with people all the time. I have two full-time jobs and both of them pretty much last the whole year. There's not a day that goes by where I'm not spending multiple hours doing something to try to make our program better. Number one, because I'm driven. Number two, because I want to be able to give our kids all the tools they need to be successful. And number three, it's something that I love and I'm passionate about and I'm always trying to work towards. So, you know, in the season, it's easy to define, you know, what takes up a lot of your time. I mean, each opponent we play probably spend about 4 or 5 hours on each team we play in terms of watching game film and doing scouting reports, practice planning, meeting with our kids, reviewing our own film, and then obviously coaching the games. During the off season, we offer a ton of optional open gym opportunities for our kids. I'll open the gym whenever it's available for our kids to get in, whether it's at 6 o'clock in the morning or, you know, in the afternoon or evening. But it's much more than that. You know, I'm always trying to improve our program. So our coaching staff meets frequently. We host a ton of camps. We host tournaments at our school. I'm consistently going to coaching clinics, roundtables, college practices, reading about the game, subscribing to different services that to help me grow in my knowledge. So there's never really a moment that we're not working towards growing our program. I mean, this offseason, we've been very blessed to have a lot of colleges express interest in a number of our players. And so working to try to connect our players to the schools that they hope to play at one day or connecting with alumni and checking in with them. It's literally almost a 24/7, 365 day a year job in many respects.
There's no question about that. Let's touch on something you just mentioned in terms of having players in your program that are going to be recruited to play college basketball and how you see your role as a high school coach in that recruitment. And it may be different for every kid and every family and how they kind of approach it, but just talk to us a little bit in general about your philosophy, about what your role is in helping to facilitate your players getting an opportunity to play college basketball.
I think sometimes high school coaches, especially with how recruiting has changed really over the last couple of decades, I think sometimes high school coaches take a little bit of a back seat when it comes to getting involved in their players' recruiting. But I'm not one of those coaches. I try to advocate for them as much as I possibly can. I put together highlight videos for all of our kids. I send emails out to hundreds and hundreds of coaches, letting them know where we're playing in the June Scholastic recruiting live period, our open gym schedule, what our season schedule looks like. I send them the stats and grades and other information about all of our kids. We're constantly making phone calls to colleges to try to get them out and watch our kids and get them some looks. But at the end of the day, throughout that whole process, it's always about our kids and nobody else, because we want them to be able to achieve their dreams and their goals, and we want them to have every avenue in which they could be successful. So part of that is also connecting with their travel coaches and making sure that we're working with those travel coaches to give those kids the best chance to get exposure and to get seen. And it also includes constantly being in communication with their families. Making sure that I know exactly what they're looking for and making sure that we're connected on just about every aspect of the recruiting process.
Two questions, or I guess it's the same question, but with two different groups of people. How do you build those relationships with college coaches to the point where they know that they can reach out to you and that you're going to give them an honest evaluation of the players in your program, because obviously you don't want to get in a situation where you're overhyping your players and then now you have a college coach that says, oh, this guy, he's not telling me the truth about his guys. And that could end up hurting not just the player that you're dealing with in the moment, but somebody in the future that's going to be a part of it. So how do you deal with building those relationships with college players, or sorry, with college coaches? And then on the other side of it, you mentioned working with the AAU coaches. How do you go about building those relationships? Is that something that you're proactively reaching out to the AAU coaches? Are the good AAU programs reaching out to you and saying, hey, coach, we got one of your guys here. What do you want us to work on with them? How does that work? Just talk about how you build relationships on both sides of that fence, both with college coaches and with the AAU coaches on the other side.
When it comes to college coaches, one of the things I think is really important, and I think this goes both ways, is to not only have communication when you need something. If the only time I talk to a lot of these college coaches is when I'm looking to get a player recruiter, or vice versa, if the only time a college coach reaches out to somebody when they need something, I think sometimes those relationships can be a little bit artificial. So we try to build relationships with college coaches all the time in many different avenues, whether it's going to practices, asking questions about their program, staying in contact with coaches about how their seasons are going, saying hi to them when you run into them in the circuit, and just, you know, trying to establish those longer lasting connections, I think is really important. And like you mentioned, you know, it's also essential to tell them the truth, because it's important that they can trust us about those players. And we also want our players to go into a situation where they are able to be themselves and to live up to those expectations of just being who they are and not somebody else. In regards to the AAU coaches, you know, I coached AAU basketball for 12 years, and I was able to develop a lot of good friendships during my time. But as I've kind of been removed from it a little bit, I think it's important to be proactive. And so what I do is I do reach out to their AAU coaches. We try to touch base pretty frequently. Nice that many of them have reached out to me as well. I attend our kids' travel games when they're in town as much as I can to show my support. And I try to build those relationships with those AAU coaches, because at the end of the day, it's a partnership. Many of us have the same goal in mind, and we want to provide great opportunities and great experiences for our players.
I think that's a really good point, and it's one that we've talked about with a lot of different coaches, where there sometimes is this rift between high school coaches and AAU, and you can hear it depending upon which side of that fence you fall on and who you talk to, that there can be sometimes some friction between the two. But I think ultimately the good high school coaches and the good AAU programs are the ones that work together with the idea that they're doing what's best for that player, for that kid, for that family, as opposed to the people maybe who are not the best operators, who are instead doing it for their benefit as an adult or an organization or whatever it might be. I think when you keep it player and kid focused on what's important to them, that's when you're going to end up getting the best results. Is that what you've seen in your experiences?
No doubt. I mean, if you put players first, you're going to have good results. And I think that there are way more people, whether it's in high school or in the AAU scene, that are, you know, servant leaders, that are putting kids first than are not. And I think it's real easy that if you have, you know, the best interests of that child in mind, it makes it really easy to work together.
Let's shift gears to directly your players at St. Ignatius. And when you have guys that come into your school as freshmen, you're obviously getting them not from a feeder program like you might if you were coaching at a public school. So just talk a little bit about how you immediately immerse them in your culture and what that onboarding process looks like for you.
Yeah, I mean, we have, I think, over 212 grade schools represented at our high school right now. So when you said we don't have a feeder school, you're 100% right. And the other thing that we run into is oftentimes, because we're, you know, a private school and we're in the city, there's a lot of kids that come from different schools that don't know each other. And many of those kids are the best players at their grade school. So when they all kind of come together freshman year, it could be a little bit of a culture shock in many ways for them. So what we do, the first thing we do is that, you know, we have our summer basketball camp for incoming freshmen and really for all of our grade levels in the month of June. And while we're there, we try to introduce those players, the younger guys, to what our program is all about. We talk to them about our culture. We have our older kids work as counselors at those camps so that those incoming freshmen can kind of meet and know some of those current high school guys and build connections with them. And we have 2 weeks worth of camp. And, you know, later on in the summer, our school does an awesome job of hosting freshman orientation where students are in the building and getting to know the lay of the land. And then once we get into school in the fall, our open gym program is open to everybody. And what's nice in Illinois, while we can't instruct them in basketball, we can be present in the gym supervising. And so we're able to kind of get to know the kids a little bit, build connection with them. And one of the things that I think helps me a lot is that I am a teacher in the building, and I teach mostly freshmen and a few sophomore classes. So a number of the kids that come in that end up trying out for our teams, I also have them in my classes as well, which is a really good thing.
How many kids, what's the numbers of freshmen that you have trying out for basketball that first when they first get there?
Oh, we are very lucky. We have about 50 to 60 freshmen try out each year, and we normally keep between 18 and 22. We believe we have one freshman team, but we do play freshman A games and freshman B games so that kids have a chance to kind of develop during game action.
All right. So once you have those kids and you have those 18 to 22 and you're kind of getting them into and you're building that culture, how do you guys structure your practice settings? Do the freshmen practice separately, then your JV and varsity practice together? Do they practice separate? Just how do you have your practices structured at your school?
I'm a big believer that our basketball program is a family, and it's not three separate levels that, you know, work in their own silos. I like to bring everyone together as much as possible. So a given week, normal practice schedule, there would be some days where the freshmen will practice alone, and sophomores, we call them sophomores, not JV, but sophomores would practice by themselves, and then varsity would have their own time. And sometimes during that week, freshmen and sophomores might combine for a practice. Sophomores and varsity might combine for a practice. There might be a little overlap between the start and end times of certain practices. And then at various points during the year, we will have senior-led practices where we'll bring all three levels together, and our seniors will plan the practice and will lead the practice. And usually it's a really fun experience for everybody and a great way to build connections and to build that family feeling in our program.
Have you ever learned something about one of the seniors as they were leading a practice that maybe you didn't know? Did you ever see a side of their personality come out as a coach that maybe you didn't see as a player?
Well, we get to know our players pretty well, but the fun thing that we kind of always joke with them is that if they get frustrated that the drill didn't start right or whatever, hey, guys, now you know how we feel. But we say that in a joking manner. No, we learn, you know, what the players are comfortable with. And I think, you know, our seniors oftentimes in those senior-led practices will divide and conquer, and it's kind of interesting to see which facets of the game certain guys focus on. It's also interesting to see, you know, how guys do in the, kind of that leadership position. We try through that and through many other circumstances to manufacture opportunities for our players to lead during a given season.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more. Give us an example of some of those situations that you put kids in to allow them to develop leadership skills. Because I think a lot of times when we think about what a leader is on a high school team, a lot of people naturally gravitate toward, well, who's the captain of the team? Who are we going to have as captains this year? And so often you see a kid named a captain, but then they don't get any guidance on really what a captain is supposed to do or how a captain is supposed to lead. And I think too often as coaches will say, man, our team just lacks leadership. We don't have any leaders on this team. And yet, if we really think about it, we have to ask ourselves, what have we done to teach them what leadership is all about? Because more often than not, kids just don't have any experience. Nobody's taught them. Nobody's talked to them. Nobody's given them examples. Nobody's showed them what we mean when we say demonstrate leadership or be a leader. So how do you give your kids those kinds of leadership opportunities day to day?
Well, you know, certainly you could be a natural leader where it just comes naturally. But I think leadership is something that's also taught. And I think as a coach, you know, oftentimes we'll come out there and we'll say, well, you need to provide, just like you said, you need to provide better leadership. Hey, you need to play better defense. Well, what does that mean? It's pretty broad, like be specific so they can have some direction. So what we do, first and foremost, is we always talk about how a player-led program is better than a coach-led program. And it's not just words or a mantra. It's something that we try to live. So some examples where we try to put our kids in leadership positions. Well, you know, I kind of mentioned how our seniors will lead some of those Be More talks we have about character development. During pregame, postgame, before practice, after practice, we always try to open up the floor to have players contribute, whether it's to give an insight on an opposing player they know or to reinforce the game plan points before a game, if it's to provide reflection or what they think the next step should be after a game or at practice. We always try to give our kids a chance to have a voice in that regard. Those senior-led practices, I think, play a big role in providing leadership opportunities. And, you know, two other things I think are very closely connected. One is a little bit more obvious how it connects to leadership. Every year at the end of the season, as we start to prepare for the next season, I hold weekly meetings with our returning seniors, the guys that are going to be seniors the next year. And we talk about every aspect of the program. We talk about plans for the next year. We talk about different issues that may have come up that past season or that we could foresee coming up in the future. And I try to get as much input from them in a variety of things as we can. But something I also do at the end of each year, I personally will meet with every single kid in our program individually, freshmen through seniors, managers, anyone that was involved in our program. And I meet with them, you know, from March till May. Usually it takes up just about every one of my free periods throughout that time. And when I meet with them, I ask them about their experience. I ask them what they like about our program, what things they think could be a little bit different and what their goals are. And I ask them how we can support them. So I think having those individual conversations in many ways empowers them to feel like their voice matters, because it does. And I think that also gives them more confidence to be more of an active leader as they kind of go through our program.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. Is there anything that has come up in those conversations over the years that has surprised you, or something that was maybe more insightful than you anticipated that really made you think about, hey, maybe I need to think about doing this differently because of something that somebody in the program told you in one of those conversations?
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of go back to Coach Pappas, you know, my first mentor in coaching. And he told me when I was first getting into it, if you stop growing, that's when you should stop coaching. And I've always tried to take that to heart and try to improve as much as I can every single year, personally, and then obviously collectively when it comes to our whole program. So, you know, it's always good to get that positive feedback in those meetings because it gives you validation and reinforcement. But I think that it's even just as, or probably more meaningful when you do get that constructive criticism or the insight on how things can improve. And, you know, I think some of the things that, you know, kind of helped us evolve our program, I'd say one is, we've kind of changed our practice structure a little bit to a little bit more playing and a little bit less breakdown drills and teaching through playing. A lot of that came through some of those meetings we had with kids early on when I first got to St. Ignatius. Some of the other things have been kind of to double down on some of the activities, like the Be More meetings, gave validation to keep it going and then even expand the program. One of the things that kind of came out from that was, you know, our kids wanted to do some more team building activities during the year. I think sometimes you go into the season and you have all these great ideas. Well, at this point, we're going to go bowling. And at this point, we're going to just drop everything and have a team meal together and this and that. And then once you get into the season, you kind of lose track of everything because you're preparing for the games and trying to get everything you want to get in that practice. And you know, through those meetings, our kids asked us to be a little bit more intentional about building in time. And so now we schedule it on our actual calendar when we're going to do some of those team building things. And it doesn't take away from the spontaneous team building moments, but it makes us be more intentional about building that into our schedule. And so those meetings have been extremely insightful and have helped us not just change our program, but also to understand our players better.
I love the idea of putting team building stuff on the schedule, because as you said, it's very easy to get lost in the day-to-day minutia of preparing for your next game and planning for your next practice. And it's easy to think, that team bowling experience isn't that great. But yet, when we think about our experiences as players and coaches and you go back in time, really what you remember are the moments much more than you remember an individual game or wins and losses or what this particular scouting report said. But you remember that bowling trip, or you remember that bus ride, or you remember that time in the locker room after a win, where it may just be being with your teammates is even more impactful than the win itself was. And I think sometimes we as coaches get so caught up in that nitty gritty of, hey, I got to get this done in this moment, that we sometimes forget to see that bigger picture. And I think you make a great point when you talk about being intentional and putting it on the schedule. I think that's something that all coaches, if you're going to be successful, there's so many pieces of coaching that are easily lost if you're not intentional about them. And I think that's a challenge that we all go through day to day. And I'll give you an example based off of something else that you said when you talked about how you shifted over the course of time, sort of how you implemented and put your practice plans together to incorporate more playing in more game-like situations as opposed to more breakdown work that you might have done in the past. So as you transition from that breakdown drill work to more games-based approach, how do you balance out how you provide instruction and feedback to the kids within? We all know how it works in the drill. If you're doing something and you're repping it over and over again, it's easy to stop and give instruction, say, hey, you got to do this, do that. Whereas we know the game is much more dynamic and you can easily pick out 10 things that went well in a particular segment. You could probably pick out 10 things that went poorly. And yet we know that we can't overload players with information. So how do you handle feedback, constructive criticism, coaching within what you do with your practices now when you're having a more of a games-based approach?
Well, taking more of a games-based approach, I think you could definitely have the same level of feedback while yielding even better results that you would in breakdown drills. So, you know, I think you go back to the word being intentional. When I plan practice, I'm very intentional about what we're going to work on and what each segment's going to focus on, even if it's taking a more games-based approach. So maybe during this one segment, we're, you know, playing up and down and we want to work on our offense. And one of the things that we're not doing well during the season is we're not spaced well and we're not engaging the defense with off-ball movement. So I'm going to be very intentional during that segment to emphasize those things throughout. I also have an army of coaches, which is great. So every single coach is assigned to a different team or a different group. And there's different times where those groups rotate out and they have to go right over to that coach to receive some feedback and also to share their own thoughts with each other. And I'll bounce, you know, between each group. And certainly if we got to stop something to make a point to the wired group, we certainly will, especially early on in the year. But I think our guys like it a lot better when we don't stop the play as much and we talk to them off to the side when we're rotating in and out and when we're kind of transitioning between drills.
Do you find that to be challenging? Is that something that comes natural to you? Because I know I think of myself when I'm watching a practice and I see things and I want to jump in and I want to be able to help. I want to be able to coach. I want to be able to instruct. And yet I know that there's a limit to sort of what my players can take in and process and actually put to use to help themselves improve and to help our team improve. So is that something that comes naturally to you where that feedback loop, you're able to figure that out both as a coach and obviously you're doing the same thing in the classroom, but just talk a little bit about how you personally provide that feedback and how natural that comes to you.
Well, I'm a talker, so I never have any problem sharing with our players what's on my mind. But I think, you know, when we're looking at it at practice, while they're playing, I'm always giving them feedback, trying to make, you know, a good balance between, you know, positive feedback and reinforcing, you know, the things that are going well, and also providing good, positive, constructive feedback as well. So I'm always coaching the guys during the game. I'm running around from spot to spot, always instructing our guys as much as I can. But I also don't want to give them, like you mentioned, too much information, because they're going to get bogged down in the details. And I think I just met with one of my assistant coaches today, actually. We had kind of talked about having little goals for each segment of practice, or for each possession out on the floor, and not trying to overwhelm them with too many things, and trying to win those goals each possession. And I think, you know, at times as a coach, you have a million things going on in your head, and you have a million more things that you want to correct out on the floor. And I think you just got to judge what's the most important thing, what's going to benefit, what type of feedback is going to benefit this player or this team the most in that given situation. And we don't always make the right decision, but we try to, and we try to give them the things that they need the most to be successful.
So that being said, when you're trying to figure out what your team needs the most, how does that factor into how you go about planning your practices, and what does your practice design look like? So the process that you go through for planning practices and designing it, what do your practices end up looking like? Just talk a little bit about the practice planning process for yourself.
I think so during the beginning of the year, it's a little bit different. Like right now, I'm in the process of planning out the first full 2 weeks of practice before our first game. I plot out, you know, what day I'm going to introduce what concept, and kind of space it out so we don't do, you know, too many new things in a single day. And then also I plot out, you know, what skills we want to work on both ends of the floor. So I'm kind of, you know, really planning ahead right now. Once we get into the heart of the season, say a practice ends or a game ends, the first thing I'm doing is I'm trying to seek feedback. So certainly I look at the game through my lens, but my lens is not the only lens. And certainly I'm going to miss some things and have a different perspective than others. So after a game or a practice, I constantly talk to our players, whether it's right after practice, individually during the school day leading up to the next practice. I talk to our coaches and I try to seek as much feedback as possible. And then I take all that feedback and all the points of things that we need to work on, and I try to focus on what's the most important thing. And I usually spend about an hour to an hour and a half planning each practice. I map it out minute by minute, name the drill, put in the place of emphasis. I organize our teams, and I try to have a theme for each day. Certainly that theme, you know, might encompass a wide range of things, or it might be very specific based on our needs. Now, when we practice, I like to keep practice moving. We do a lot, and I would like to think that our practices are real crisp and are real fast-paced in many different ways. We certainly want practices to simulate a game, but we also want it to be more difficult than a game. So once they play in the games, our players find those situations a little bit easier, or find themselves in a spot where they've seen this situation before because we've practiced it. Normally, we do some breakdown drills, and we incorporate a lot of skill development. Oftentimes, I front load that at the beginning of practice, along with our full court stuff. And then the later stages of practice is mostly our game-based training, our situational stuff, our small-sided games, and certainly our late-game situations.
At what point in the process do you engage your assistant coaches with the practice plan? Are they bringing you suggestions of, hey, here's something that I think that we've maybe neglected, or something that we didn't do very well in the last practice or the last game, and they're bringing those to you? Is it you putting together that entire practice plan and then taking it to them and then getting feedback? Just how do you get your assistant coaches involved in the practice planning process?
I'm a very collaborative leader in terms of my leadership style. I believe in trying to seek as much input as possible. And my coaches are fantastic. Our coaching staff is unbelievable. You're only as strong as the people you surround yourself with, and I surround myself with some fantastic people and some outstanding coaches. So, you know, in terms of where they're at in the process for planning for practice and also for game planning, I involve them throughout the entire process. I seek input before I start putting together our plans. I will email our practice plan, not just to our varsity coaches, but to all the coaches in our program, if they see something that they want changed or feel like, you know, we're not spending enough time on a certain thing, I do feel like our coaches are empowered to share that with me. The best thing in terms of, you know, creating a culture of collaboration amongst your staff is to make sure that everyone feels like they have a voice, but to also create a culture where assistant coaches don't feel like if they make a suggestion and it's turned down, that it's because you don't value their opinion. It's just because you went in a different direction. And I think our coaches are wonderful when it comes to giving suggestions and not taking it personal if we don't take their suggestions and not gloating when their suggestions work out well. I think that we got a real good team and everyone's pulling and rowing in the same direction. And it really yields really outstanding results.
When you think about your responsibilities as a head coach, there's typically two types of assistant coaches that you have on any staff. You have one type of assistant who is somebody that loves being an assistant coach, and that's sort of their niche, and that's kind of where they want to be for whatever reason. Maybe just because of where they are in their career. Maybe it could just be the fact that they just enjoy the process of what it means to be an assistant coach. And then you have other coaches who eventually aspire to be a head coach and take over their own program one day. So how do you look at your responsibility as a head coach to help to develop your staff? And what are some of the things that you do? You've already talked about a couple of them, but how do you look at trying to help your assistant coaches develop themselves so that they can be successful both in the setting they're in now, but also if they decide to move on and take over their own program?
I go back to my time at St. Pat's under Mike Bailey as his assistant. He has taken so much pride in moving his assistants on to be head coaches. I went from his staff to St. Ignatius. This guy, Tim Trendle, outstanding coach, went from his staff to coach at two other schools in the area. Gene Heidkamp over at Bennett, Ron Ashlaw at Waukegan, Chris Mraz over at Ridgewood. I can name Chaz Taft. In fact, I can name tons of coaches. And he really took a lot of pride in moving coaches onto those positions. But it just wasn't him being happy that they did. It was in the preparation leading up to it. So like when I was his assistant, not only did I do double duty and coach the sophomores and the varsity, but I was in every meeting, every parent meeting, every discussion with him. He had me handle a lot of the phone calls, a lot of the administrative work, basically had me do all the unseen things that as a young coach, you wouldn't expect to have to do. He made me do it so that I had a variety and diversity of experiences so that I was prepared and ready to go. I think looking at our staff, I've tried to bring that same idea. You know, we are a learning and a teaching program, and we want everyone in our program to always be constantly evolving and growing and improving. You know, we're not the coaches that are those coaches that kind of say, hey, do as I say, but not as I do. If we're always telling our kids to work on their craft and to put in the extra time and to train hard and to prepare, well, we better be doing the same thing as coaches ourselves. So as a staff, we do a lot of things. Like I mentioned, you know, empowering our staff members to be contributors in many different facets of our program. We end up dividing and conquering off-season projects that people take ownership in, whether it's trying to improve our offensive or defensive systems, practice planning, skill development. It might be, hey, let's all take a different team in the NBA playoffs and let's study them and look at all the different adjustments they make throughout the course of a series. It could be attending college practices and going to coaching clinics or engaging in discussion or, you know, giving our staff a book to read in the offseason. I think it is a responsibility of mine as a head coach to give our guys all the tools they need to continue to grow and develop. And that applies to the guys that love being an assistant coach and don't aspire to be head coaches. And that also applies to the guys that have those aspirations. I think for the guys that really want to move into the head coaching realm, I think it's a responsibility as the head coach to kind of do what Coach Bailey did to me and give them some more of those administrative responsibilities on top of what happens on the floor. So hopefully down the road, I've been at St. Ignatius for 6 years, and I hope a number of our guys move on to be head coaches, and hopefully they can gain at least a little bit from their experience on our staff.
I think it's a great point that you make about giving assistant coaches who want to be head coaches not just experience on the floor being in charge of certain things, but also giving them some of those administrative duties, because almost to a man, the coaches that we've talked to, Matt, that have transitioned from being an assistant coach to a head coach, one of the things they always say to us is, I didn't realize how much non-basketball stuff that I had to do as a head coach that I really wasn't necessarily aware of as an assistant coach. When you think about managing your budget and uniforms and travel and organization and doing just a lot of the things that even assistant coaches on the staff may not be aware of, but certainly that high school players are not aware of, certainly that high school parents are not aware of. And I think it's a great point that that administrative role is really critical to be able to give your assistants that opportunity. Because a lot of times we know, yeah, we got to give them more responsibility on the floor and maybe let them run this drill, or they're in charge of sideline out of bounds, or they're in charge of late game situations or whatever it might be. But a lot of times what trips guys up when they do get finally to have a head coaching job, it's like, man, I didn't realize that I had to do all these other different things that when I was an assistant, I just had to coach on the floor. And as a head coach, you obviously know that that's not all you have to do.
Yeah, it's actually a small part of it. You know, it's obviously a very important part of it, but you know, the day-to-day operations and the administrative side, you know, certainly a huge part of it as well. And you know, that's one of the things that I agree with you. I see, you know, guys kind of getting into it for the first time, and it's a little bit of a shock to their system with all the stuff they have to do beyond what happens at practice and games. And I think, you know, if you have that preparation, at least you can see a little bit of a window into what to expect. I think that prepares you greatly for when you do take over. You know, I think nowadays in coaching, you see coaches sticking around a lot less in terms of longevity. And I think a big part of it is, you know, not having mentors to help guide them through it and to help support them. But I also think part of it is just not understanding the full scope of what being a head coach entails. You know, there's that romantic side where, you know, you're thinking about drawing up the game winning play at, you know, during a timeout at the end of a championship playoff, you know, game. And that's certainly awesome and it's fun and that can be a part of it. But there's much more to it in terms of developing a successful program that has sustained success, not just a team that wins a few games in a given year.
You've mentioned a couple times the importance that mentors have played in your life and your career. So if you were going to give advice to coaches that are out there listening about, A, why they should have a mentor, and then what that mentoring relationship should look like if it's healthy, what would you say to coaches about mentoring and mentorship?
I think having a mentor has been one of the most impactful things on my career. And I've had a number of different mentors that have different experiences in coaching. You know, I mentioned Ken Davis, who was the coach at Lake Forest College, and Mike Bailey at St. Pat's, Jim Tracy, who was at Revis and leads our coaches association, and a number of others. Coach Pappas growing up at Deerfield. You know, those guys, they give you insight. They've been through the battles and they've been through the wars, and they give you your perspective. One of our coaches at our school on our girls' side, Tom McKenna, has been a tremendous mentor to me. He's a Hall of Fame coach as well. And I think having someone to bounce ideas off of or to share your experiences with or seek advice of that are invested in you but aren't there at your practices on a day-to-day basis, they kind of have a little bit of an outside perspective, I think is invaluable. I've used my mentors in so many different ways, whether it was something I was struggling with or an area I thought I needed to improve, or if I was just seeking, you know, validation from someone I trust. I think the biggest part of the mentor relationship is to have that open and honest conversation. Like, I know each of the guys that I mentioned that I go to for advice and that I talk to, that they'll be honest with me. And, you know, they're not afraid of hurting my feelings because they know that I know that they have my best interests in mind. And they have been invaluable, I think, to my growth and to my journey as a coach. And, you know, certainly the assistant coaches that we've had on staff have done the same thing. And I think having that combination of, you know, a fantastic staff that's there to support you and challenge you when it's needed, and to have those mentors that are not with you every day to help guide you is absolutely paramount. I think, you know, if more younger coaches found mentors to rely upon, I think it would make their journey a little bit easier as well.
I love that concept of the mentor not being immersed in the day-to-day details, where they're just not caught up in it the same way that you as the head coach are, or you as an assistant coach are. And instead, they can kind of look at it objectively. They don't know any of your players on a personal level. So they're looking at this from a high level situation. And I think oftentimes that brings, as you said, an outside perspective that can be refreshing and can get you to see something that maybe you would not have been able to see on your own. And I think no matter what walk of life you're talking about, whether it's coaching, whether it's in your career, whether it's as a teacher, we know that you know, mentoring teachers that have a mentor that come in their first year and they're assigned to a mentor and they really build a good relationship, that those teachers are much likely to stick around in the teaching profession. And so I think it's proven over time that if you do have a mentor, if you do have somebody that you can confide in, that you're ultimately going to be end up being in a much better place in whatever your chosen profession is. And certainly that's the case for coaching. As we get towards the end of our time, Matt, I want to give you a chance to answer one more final question, two-parter. Your biggest challenge as you look ahead over the next year or two, and then your greatest joy. When you wake up in the morning and you think about what it is that you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy? What puts a smile on your face?
My biggest challenge is, well, so we're going to have a pretty good team this year, and everyone asks us how we're going to be, and I always tell them, well, as long as the coach stays out of the way, I think we'll be okay. So that might be one of the challenges, just to stay out of the way. No, to be honest, I think, you know, looking at our program, you know, I took over from a coach that was an absolute legend, Coach Keogh. His name's on the floor, and he's a good friend of mine. And I always respected him from afar and got to know him really well personally. You know, taking over from him, though, we kind of had to build things back up a little bit in our program. And we've reached a spot where, you know, we feel like we're in a position to be really successful this year. We've had our last couple of years have had some really good seasons, and we feel great about our prospects this year. So I think one of the challenges is to really not forget why we all fell in love with basketball, whether it's our coaching staff or our players. I think, you know, preseason rankings and expectations that are high and the pressures that all of that entails, I think sometimes it gets to you. And certainly, you know, as a team or as a coach or as a player, when you're going through that, you sometimes lose sight of the bigger picture and you sometimes lose sight of what your why is. And so making sure during this year where there are high expectations, where there is a lot of pressure, making sure that we always come back to the basics and that we love the game and that we enjoy playing for our teammates and coaching our kids and not getting too high when things go really well and not getting too low when there's moments of struggle. So I think that's key. The second challenge, I would say, is making sure me as a coach and us as a program, if we do continue to achieve the success that we've had the last couple of years, that we never get that mindset that we've arrived. We always got to stay hungry. We always got to stay humble. And we always got to continue to grow and evolve and to make improvements. And I think that, that those two things, while they certainly can be challenges, I think can also be, you know, motivational keys to continued success in the future. In terms of my greatest joy, I love coaching. I've been wanting to be a coach since I was 8 years old. I had that 1 year where I was a little sidetracked from basketball, but I've wanted to be a coach as long as I can remember. And every day I wake up, I count my blessings and I'm thankful for, you know, my family or for my wife, for my friends and for my opportunity to be able to teach and coach at a school that's so incredibly special. It's truly a blessing to be called coach, and it's also a tremendous responsibility too. You know, the greatest joy I get from the actual coaching of basketball is working with such incredible people. I enjoy spending time with our coaching staff and with our players, and I greatly value those lifelong lasting relationships that are developed. And I hope that through those relationships and through basketball, that we can also have a positive impact on everyone we come into contact with. And that's what coaching is all about.
It really is. That's very well said. I think when I look back and reflect upon my life, and I think you do the same, that basketball plays such a central role in who I am, but also who I know and who I've been fortunate enough to come in contact with and who's influenced me over time. And basketball has just been something that I could have never imagined when I picked up a ball when I was, whatever, 4 years old, 5 years old, just throwing that ball up towards the hoop on my driveway. The things that the game has been able to do for me, and that things that hopefully through whether it's this podcast or coaching or camps or whatever else it is that we do, that we are able to give back and make the game a better place and have an impact, as you said, on the young people that we get an opportunity to come in contact with. Before we wrap up, Matt, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, how they can find out more about you and your program, whether you want to share social media, email, website, whatever you feel comfortable sharing with our audience, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Awesome. Thanks. So our school is St. Ignatius College Prep. Our website is ignatius.org. My personal social media, it's literally all basketball stuff. It's at Coach M Monroe. So COACHMMONROE. And then on Instagram and Twitter, our program's handle is on both of them, SICPBB, at SICPBB. So certainly, if anyone wants to keep in touch with our program, those are probably the best ways to do it. I just kind of learned how to post Instagram stories a few weeks ago. So I think our content's gotten a little bit better on our program pages.
Nice work. You're probably one step ahead of me on Instagram. So Coach Jason's supposed to take over that Instagram for me, man. Someday he's going to do that. So if he stops having kids, we'll have to wait and see if that ever happens. So
yeah, good luck.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Well, Matt, we can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us. We are super appreciative of your time. Love the conversation. There was so much in there that I think coaches can take away that can help them to grow and do all the things that we talked about tonight, and just to evolve and become better coaches and continue to have an impact on the players that they touch on a day-to-day basis. So thank you. And to everyone out there who's a part of our audience, we appreciate you listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.